It happens in an amazing castle with a tickle-em-to-death torture chamber and a 500-player piano with 480,000 keys. It's a musical merry-go-round, sparkling with songs and dances, whirling you away to a new world of wonders.
Have a smoke. Have a cigar.
Don't mind if I do.
Something to eat. Something to drink.
Dr. T is sweet on Mrs. C. So is Mr. Z, the plumber, who fixes sinks and knows all the angles.
When the plumber Zabludowski has installed the last sink, I want him disintegrated, atom by atom.
See the dangerous descent from the sky-high ladder. See the whammy duel between Dr. T and Mr. Z. See the eighth wonder of the cinema world, the startling, daring Wonderama in color by Technicolor.
Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Nerd Orchestra. We are your podcasting headquarters, not for the movies you love, but for the music that accompanies them. I'm your nerdy host, Chuck Dill, and this is episode number 14 of the podcast that takes you through a journey of the music that scores your favorite action and adventure movies. As for me, I grew up in the 1970s loving comic books and all sorts of genre movies. I started a deeply rooted love of orchestral movie soundtracks at just the right age to alienate me with all my peers in high school. Unfortunately, I've got no music education, training, or aptitude, so we solemnly turn to Drs. Bob and Husband. Dr. Bob, please tell our listeners why you two have volunteered to count the number of times I use the word swelling to describe a piece of music.
Well, we also grew up in the 1970s. We are also giant nerds, but we hate money, so we got terminal degrees in music performance.
That's true.
And what movie are we here to talk about tonight?
The 5,000 Fingers of Mr. T. I mean Dr. T.
That's a big difference. The 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T. When you first mentioned this, it sounded to me like it would be a 1970s horror movie, perhaps from the House of Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Something like a Dr. Fibes, but it's not that at all.
Oh, it's a delightful children's movie from 1953, which failed miserably upon its initial premiere, but has since become something of a cult classic.
And why were you pushing for this one?
Because I know that neither one of you would have ever heard of it, and it's fantastic.
So, I know that you were not a child in 1953, but is this a childhood memory?
No. I had not seen this movie until maybe 3 years ago. As you may know, I obsessively buy physical media.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this DVD set, which was all movies produced by Stanley Kramer. So it was an odd little set. The Wild One.
Oh, nice.
Guess Who's Coming to Dinner.
Okay.
Member of the Wedding. And the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you had yourself one hell of a night.
I sure did.
Ladies and gentlemen, this 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T was directed by Roy Rowland. Scripts and lyrics by Theodore Seuss Geisel. Composed by Frederick Hollander, who I had never heard of, which is bad on me. He was born in 1896, but he died in January of 1976. He studied at Engelbert Humperdinck's master class at Stern Conservatory. He left Nazi Germany in 1933 because of his Jewish descent. We're going to have to do that here ourselves soon, start the mass exodus. Wrote the music for over 100 films, including Destry Rides Again in 1939, A Foreign Affair in 1948, and Sabrina in 1954. He earned an Oscar nomination for Best Scoring of a Musical Picture.
For Dr. T.
Yes. I didn't write that down, but yes.
He also wrote the score for the Marlene Dietrich film The Blue Angel and her very famous song, Falling in Love Again.
Were you familiar with him before?
No.
We gathered for this. So one of the things that hooked me when I sat down to watch this movie for the very first time with Doctors Bob and Doctor's husband, Dr. T was played by Hans Conried. I'm terrible.
That's all right.
And I recognized this dude immediately, but not because of his physical characteristics, because of his voice. And I found out later that he was the chameleon in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, the Seven Little Superheroes episode.
Which we watched after we saw the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
Seven little superheroes in quite a fix. One will die by fire, and then there will be six. It was wonderful. He was also Captain Hook in Peter Pan, Dr. Dredd in the 1980s Monsters of Superheroes cartoon Drac Pack. He did a lot of voices for Spider-Man. He did a lot of animation voices. It was considered his second career.
Yes.
He was much sought after for that.
He was Snidely Whiplash in Dudley Do-Right cartoons.
Shut up.
Really?
Yes. And he was the physical model for the king in Sleeping Beauty.
Oh.
But he did not do the voice.
Huh. Yeah, he characterized himself as a bit player, but a popular one. Everybody wanted him. So, yeah. Any other tidbits about either Dr. Seuss or Frederick Hollander or Hans Conried?
Well, Hans Conried did voice the Grinch in not the original How the Grinch Stole Christmas, but one of the something. The Grinch, Grinch's Cat in the Hat or something.
And the mother and the plumber in the movie were actually married in real life, right?
They were. Peter Lind Hayes and his wife Mary. What was her last name? It'll come to me. Mary Healy. Peter Lind Hayes was a vaudeville star who transitioned to radio, and then he performed with his wife Mary Healy, and they were very, very popular in the 50s. Household names.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. We've forgotten all about them. But
yeah.
They're adorable.
They are. Yeah.
So Hans Conried was enthusiastic about the role, and lifting this right out of Wikipedia, saying in retrospect, "I had never had any such part before, never have since, and probably never will again. We rehearsed for 8 weeks before I was engaged to shoot for 8 weeks. An extravagance that as a bit player I had never known. If it had been a success with my prominent part in the role, it would have changed my life." But as Dr. Bob mentioned, it was no success.
It wasn't.
No.
No.
Also, we should mention the child actors, Tommy Rettig, later to become famous in Lassie as Timmy.
Gotcha.
Also, George Chakiris from West Side Story appears as a backup dancer in the big ballet scene, which I'm sure we'll discuss.
Yeah, lots to discuss with this one. According to Dr. Seuss, the film's creator and co-writer, one of the 150 boys that were hired for the piano scene vomited on the piano while filming. This caused a chain reaction, and they were left with 150 vomiting boys. Seuss said later that the film's reviews were similar to this incident.
Yes, I forget where I read it now, but I guess Dr. Seuss was at the premiere, and people just started trickling out after about 10 minutes. And by the end of the movie, there was only one little boy left in the audience because he was waiting for his mother to pick him up.
That would have been you if you'd been
there. Yeah. I was going to say, was that you, Bob? All right. Dr. Seuss based Dr.
Terwilliger.
Terwilliger on a piano teacher he had as a child. The piano teacher would smack his fingers with a pencil whenever he made a mistake. The original version of the film was screened, and this was a version that was filmed during a Hollywood war between the head of the studio and the director and the producer, and this film got lots and lots of notes. So It was a classic case of Hollywood suits ruining everything.
Yeah.
So that was Stanley Kramer was the producer, and he was fighting with the studio head, and so he was forbidden from directing the movie, but he did secretly direct several scenes.
Gotcha. Yeah. But the original version of the film, as shown and to preview audiences, had 20 musical numbers. And
good Lord.
The original version is considered to be lost.
True.
Thank God.
So you can find this... You can find this song, soundtrack on Amazon Music. Is that where we got it? And it has what would be two discs or two albums, but in today's digital world, that's not a thing. And the first disc would be music from the movie, and the second would be music that was not in the movie. I can only assume part of the overage. We're only going to be looking today at the music from the movie. And just to give you guys kind of a timeline to orient your head in all this, the first Dr. Seuss work on screen was a cartoon in 1942, Horton Hatches the Egg. 1943, The 500 Hats of Bartholomew Cubbins. 1944, And to Think That I Saw It on Mulberry Street. In 1950, there was an animated cartoon on TV, an ongoing thing called Gerald McBoing Boing. So that was his big break. And that was in 1950. But in 1953, that's when we got the 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T. And that was the first live-action Dr. Seuss anything. And we've come to find out that this was the only live-action thing that Dr. Seuss himself was involved in. Is that right?
Correct.
Grinch, which everybody knows, Dr. Seuss from How the Grinch Stole Christmas, that didn't come around till 1966. And that was the next thing Hollywood did with Dr. Seuss.
Wow.
So it took them 13 years to get over themselves and give him another shot.
Many happy things happened in 1966.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree. 1970, Horton Hears a Who. 71, The Cat in the Hat. 72, The Lorax. The next theatrical release with live action featuring Dr. Seuss's work was in the year 2000, How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey. And we will turn to Dr. Husband for his opinion of that movie.
How the Grinch Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey? I don't know that we've seen
it. I've never seen it.
Oh, really?
No.
It's okay.
I've seen scenes from it, but I don't think I've seen the movie.
Is it okay if you hate Jim Carrey?
There's so much makeup on him.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen it. I did see it in the theater, and...
You make a perfect animated special that's only 23 minutes long, why make a feature film of it?
I loved the... I really like his animated movies, you know, his cartoons. And so I was quite surprised by this movie. I mean, not surprised by the design, just surprised that it actually got a green light.
You sat there during the whole movie saying, this is like a fever dream.
Just it is.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
I found it extremely delightful, very enjoyable. I had a great time during it. I don't know that I would have liked it as a kid. I think I liked its whimsy, and I loved the sets. I loved Hans Conried playing over-the-top character, just using every bit of that voice and that charisma that he had. It was wonderful.
The costumes were insane,
mm-hmm.
weren't they?
Yeah. There's the little boys who are featured in the film wear little beanies with a yellow hand coming out of the top.
Uh-huh.
And Chuck found... That prop was used in an episode of The Monkees. Davy Jones wearing one. So they must... What was The Monkees? 66, 67?
Yeah.
They must have had some cultural memory of
The
5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
It's probably a recent thing. They may even have re-aired it in theaters, as they used to do.
Sure.
I think I saw the Robin Hood, the one with the fox, the Disney Robin Hood. I think I saw that as a re-air. I'm not sure when it came out. All right, are we ready to get into it, or is
sure.
there, yeah. there
more details? Okay, then let's get into it with the first track, the opening. No. We don't want to do that one. That's 5 minutes long. I'm sorry. We're going to open with 10 Happy Fingers.
10 Happy Fingers.
10 little dancing maidens dancing, oh so fine. 10 happy little fingers, and they're mine, oh mine.
So the plot of this movie is that this little boy is being forced to do his piano lessons. He doesn't like his piano teacher, but his mom is insistent, and the plumber is at the house, and the plumber knows a little bit about piano and music himself, and is kind of interested in the mother, so we have a little bit of romance hinted at, but the boy falls asleep.
Womp, womp. I should say the singing voice of the boy is not Tommy Reddick. It is Anthony Butella, who was the founder of the Letterman.
Oh, right. But he was an adult at the time, right?
No. That's a child's voice.
He was a teenager, 13.
Oh, nice. Pretty interesting. So, any thoughts on 10 Happy Fingers?
Oh, it's a fun little song. I like to learn that at the piano and sing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, it's set up as this is his piano exercise, so it's very simple and outlined a triad chord. Mm-hmm. Bum, bum, bum.
So is this the theme of the movie? We do come back to it.
It does come back several times, yes. I don't know that it's developed orchestrally.
Yeah, I think if it did, it would have been in the big... Well, there's the big
piano number.
Piano number.
I guess we'll just have to wait and see, won't
yeah.
we?
Yeah, and I'm sure they're playing 10 the Happy Fingers. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have to look for that as we trip on through. And let's do that right now with listening to Piano Concerto.
So, yes, to answer your question, yes. It is the theme of the movie.
It is the theme of the movie, because it's developed in that.
Would we consider that developed? Because that was kind of chaotic.
Yes. Well, it starts with ba 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 ba, and then it goes on to ba 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 ba. So it does develop a little bit. It isn't, developed into other themes. It's not a fugue or anything like that, but it's developed a little bit.
So to give us some context, this is a crazy scene with a piano that could only be dreamed up by Dr. Seuss. It is a long piano, and it has two sets of keys, one above and one below. And it's so long that 500 boys could sit there banging on it. And that's Dr. T's big dream, so that he would have 5,000 fingers to play his song, which is 10 Happy Fingers.
Mm-hmm.
But during this particular scene that, with this music, it's just Tommy?
Bart Collins is the character's name. Bart.
It's just that kid trying to do his best and banging on the piano like wild and turning out this kind of music.
Uh-huh.
Not vomiting.
Not, that would come later.
Well, I think the way I interpret that is that all that music was in Dr. Terwilliger's head.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Seems That's like fun. There's lots.
I enjoyed that.
The story eventually involves the kid's mother as Dr. T's assistant, and she's being held captive by Dr. T, and the kid's plumber, father figure, who needs to put in the sinks so that Dr. T's academy can open. And this is our hero figure, I guess, the plumber, the father figure to this kid. There's a really boring song called Dream Stuff where the plumber puts the kid to sleep by singing to him.
I thought that was a really nice part of this movie.
I know you would think that, yeah.
It was sweet.
But it's nothing. It's nothing to the next scene.
They pretend to go fishing together. Remember?
Yes, it was pretend fishing.
Yeah.
But it's nothing compared to the duel between the plumber and Dr. T.
Oh.
Called Hypnotic Duel.
That was fun.
It's an awesome fight scene.
Abacadabricadabricadillica. T-E-R-W-I-L-L-Illica.
See, that was a fun piece. So it starts. What was the title of that piece again, please?
Hypnotic Duo.
So you get some dance rhythms in there. I picked out a bolero and a merengue in there, but it's a fun little piece.
Let me start with the theremin, which is an
electronic
synthesized instrument, but made great use of in sci-fi movies of the
1950s. I was going to say, I've heard that from Star Trek.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm not familiar with it. I thought that they had made it up. So when I heard it here, I'm.
It's like a box, and it has a hoop, like a PBS antenna, and also regular rabbit ear antennas, and you move your hands around through the things. I'll show you a video.
Manipulating the fields.
And it goes...
It interacts with your electric fields in your body or your electric stimulus in your body. Yeah. It doesn't shock you or anything, but that's how it makes it sound. And you could actually learn to play the theremin just by how you move your hands.
Yeah. Have either of you two toyed around with it?
Good not. God, no.
No. I've seen it live being played.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting for about 10 minutes.
Well, that's why I say played around with it.
Yeah.
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 It's like one of those toys on Christmas that you're happy to get and then you forget about.
Unless it's a Red Ryder BB gun.
Right.
Also, Friedrich Hollander, I believe, would have been familiar with the music of Kurt Weill.
Yes.
So coming from Germany in the 30s, there was a big cabaret culture. And so something about that composition just put me in mind of that.
With I just love
it. Odd instrumentation and dance rhythms and forms.
Yeah.
Well, and I think I heard harp at one point.
Mm-hmm. You did?
So to give the listener some context, this is where the plumber and Dr. T are at a war of hypnotism. So it's a fight scene, but no punch is thrown. They're very close to each other, dancing all over the place. Dancing is the wrong word. It's strong choreography in trying to hypnotize each other or ward off being hypnotized. And they end up doing different dance moves, which I guess is why they pull in different instruments, because there's different moves being done on screen.
Yes, and of course the tension increases, as does the tempo of the dances. So that's why you've got, that's why it goes from a bolero. There was something before the bolero. I just recognized it as a dance form, right? And then the bolero is a dum da dum 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 da dum dum dum. Da dum dum dum, right? And then we get the meringue, right? So you've got this little sequence of increasing the tempo, increasing the syncopation that matches the tension that's happening in the fight, which progresses to its conclusion.
Yeah. It really was an excellent scene, and I think that that's the scene where I settled in and like, okay, I'm going to enjoy myself. This movie is right up my alley.
Yeah, I was, you know, for me, it was the orchestration that I loved in this movie. Really did. I didn't like that it all took place in basically the same set. You know, I mean, it was the house and his dream, you know, and the, basically the same two areas. And then, of course, the set has different levels, you know.
Yeah.
But given that, I still think it's a wonderful cult movie and I would totally watch it again. But I loved the music. Loved it. And especially as it goes on.
Dr. Bob, is this the first time you tried to show Dr. Husband this movie?
No, I tried once before and he fell fast asleep.
Guilty. I probably couldn't get past the hand on the head, you know? Like, it's a lot. You're confronted with it immediately. The first thing you see is the kid with the... Well, I mean, maybe not. I can't remember if it opens with
it him. It is,
yes.
It's
a dream, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's with the kid with the blue hat and the yellow hand on the head. That's the first thing you see. And then these guys chasing him around and they all look weird. And you're like, what the hell is this?
Explain all that with two words. Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
And you're done. So, yes, this hypnotic duel ends with no winner. Dr. T, and what's the name of the plumber? Am I going to call him?
I've got it written down here. August Zabludowski.
Zabludowski, yeah. I'm going to call him the plumber.
Yeah, just the plumber's fine. The mother's name is Heloise.
No winner. They end up pooped and sitting in a couch or something and complimenting each other.
Doesn't he offer him those cigars and the drinks and everything? And he gestures and the cigars come out pre-lit in a row.
That was awesome.
And then he offers him cocktail and the whole cocktail tiered set of cocktails comes rising up out of the floor, right?
That would be so dangerous.
Oh, yes. Yes. That was fun. Yeah.
So they're all friends now. The captured mom and the plumber and Dr. T, or at least that's what Dr. T wants them to think. And so they participate in a song called Get Together Weather.
Come on, it's time we got together, cause it's get-together weather, and in get-together weather, together is just what we got to get.
Come on,
the weatherman's insisting, this is weather beyond resisting, this is get-together weather, together is just what we got to get. What wonderful weather to go on an outing.
What wonderful weather to run around shouting.
What wonderful weather for love to be sprouting.
It's mighty fine weather, I hope that it stays. What glorious weather for zipping and zooming.
What glorious weather for hearts to be blooming.
What glorious weather for brining and brooming.
It's mighty fine weather we're having these days. Come on, the weatherman's reporting that the weather's right for sporting and for love and assorted courting. Together is just what we got to get.
What marvelous weather for cooing and billing.
For yodeling, wobbling, gargling, trilling.
What marvelous weather for dally-down-dilling.
What marvelous weather, hey, hey, what a day.
What fabulous weather for loping and leaping.
What fabulous weather for bipping and beeping.
For snipping and snapping and snooping and sneeping.
What fabulous weather, hey, hey, what a day.
Come on, the weatherman's announcing that the weather's right for flouncing and for bouncing. This is get-together weather. Together is just what we got to get. Bouncing, this is get together weather. Together is just what we've got to get.
I think we mentioned this, but we should, of course, again emphasize that the lyrics to all the songs are written by Dr. Seuss, and that's obvious in listening to that.
Just what we got to get. Yeah, that's fun. It started with a little hoedown, and then it goes into a. The hoedown's introduced by the violins. Da 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 da, and you know, sort of thing. And then we get a Scottish reel in there on I think verse two or verse three. Verse three, you get a Scottish reel. It's a fun song. I was just sharing with Bob while we were listening to it that this is the kind of music that makes me want to watch classic Hollywood movie musicals. I just love this. So much fun.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing more, especially after enjoying this so much.
Good to know, gentlemen.
You don't want to break that seal.
I got six DJ cases full of DVDs.
Nice. So, yeah, get-together weather, where Dr. T is successful in making the plumber think that they are now friends. The plumber has decided that he will go do his job so that Dr. T's institute can open. And the kid is very upset because he feels like the plumber's not listening to him, that he's in danger, that his mother needs to help, that Dr. T's a bad guy. So the kid wanders off and sings Because We're Kids.
Now just because we're kids, because we're sort of small, because we're closer to the ground, and you are bigger pound by pound, you have no right, you have no right to push and shove us little kids around. Now just because your throat has got a deeper voice and lots of wind to blow it out at little kids who don't dare shout, you have no right, you have no right to boss and beat us little kids about. Just because you've whiskers on your face to shave, you treat us like a slave. So what? It's only hair. Just because you wear a wallet near your heart, you think you're twice as smart. You know that isn't fair. But we'll grow up someday, and when we do, I pray we won't just grow in size and sound, and just be bigger pound by pound. I'd hate to grow like some I know, who push and shove us little kids around.
I would have thought that was a woman's voice if
Me
I had
too.
Not read that it was a teenage boy.
Yeah, I think you said when we were watching the movie that's not his singing voice.
I did. I thought it was Marnie Nixon or somebody.
Yeah, and I thought for sure it was a woman's voice.
Hmm.
But it wasn't, was it?
No.
No.
So you are impressed by this voice. It's good.
I am. I'm impressed, actually, that the singer that they chose matched very well in timbre to the actor's voice. Yeah.
Something about this piece, especially with what we've heard so far, it seems, I don't mean this negative, but very flat, like staying within the same range, not sweeping or dropping or taking chances or being exciting like the other pieces. Am I wrong in visualizing it like that?
I think the positive quality of this song, you're not wrong in that, like, it is a much simpler, much stripped down, it's just a small orchestration of this. It's a child's song, so at a time of he's disappointed and he's doubting himself, so it would be very introspective, and that's what he's gone for here. But I think the quality of this song that I think makes it stand out is the way that the melody goes and the harmonic shifts. So he's got this real simple melody, da 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 da, right, real simple there. But then it goes da 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 da. Just that, those two little turns of harmonic direction, very, very clever. That's why I like the piece.
And I almost wanted to say that it was probably a consideration for the voice, being that it was a teenage boy. But it's the range is an octave and a half, at least. So I have to think it's a very intentional kind of mood cleanser.
So maybe the flatness. When I hear you say that, when we talk about the flatness of it, that it felt, you know, I think that it might have to do more with the size and the scope of the orchestration.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't mean it as any negative, and I did notice the range that the singer's voice had.
Mm-hmm.
It's more about the piece. Just, you know, staying within, not getting too excited, not getting too depressed.
Do you remember the Willy Wonka, was it called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? The original movie. Was it Willy Wonka? Willy Wonka. Do you remember that song, Cheer Up Charlie, right? That's from the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very introspective. It's a mother talking to her son, you know, and it's like that. It's real quiet. It's really, you need that.
You're right.
I hear you, and I know you're not criticizing it. You're just sort of commenting on the...
It makes the other pieces more powerful. It stands out on its own. You don't want every musical piece to be bombastic.
Yeah, I think you need that, though. Because at one point, if you're watching this for the first time, you might think, this is it, the kid's going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
How is he ever going to climb out of this? Right? So we have
That's what I was hoping for.
In the story, we need to believe that he's actually lost. Because he has lost temporarily. He's lost the battle.
This song made me think, quit your whining. Kids ruin everything. Do your damn piano lessons.
that's the father in you. Yeah. I love that.
Speaking of Willy Wonka and flat, I got a golden ticket.
And a da-da-da to find my way.
The child singer in Willy Wonka, the Chocolate Factory, is a terrible singer.
We always joked about that in our family. It's like, I got a golden ticket. Gonna be a golden day.
Let's find him and let's beat him up. Okay, so most of the pieces that we are going to play for you today are only a couple minutes long, and it's like that, I guess. Musicals are like that. You get in and you get out. But this is another
just get in, get out, get your business done,
Right. This is another instrumental piece from the movie. A wonderful scene, the Dungeon Ballet.
Oh, this is visually, this is the...
This is the movie.
The movie, yeah. The acid trip.
The setup is that Dr. T has imprisoned anyone who plays any instrument besides the piano. And so all of these instrumentalists are trapped in the dungeon. And it's, if you can imagine Dr. Seuss drawing orchestral instruments, that's what we see on the screen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
not for nothing that every gentleman in this scene is shirtless.
Yes.
Because they're, dancers. You can't have too many clothes to bind you down.
And painted green.
Yes. That whole scene is on YouTube. Everyone should
absolutely look it up right now. Watch it.
Dungeon Ballet, 5,000 Fingers of Dr. T.
It's just like, bring a friend like in a fever to watch dream. It. It is like a fever dream. It's like, what would happen if they did a live version of Everything I Know About Dr. Seuss? Well, there you go.
It is truly wonderful. And I think, and you guys are the experts, but I think that each section of this particular piece is focusing on a different type of instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. On purpose, because that's what's happening on screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, it culminates into a big full orchestral piece. Yeah. Frederick Hollander.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Now I want to listen to all of his stuff. Yeah.
So
wonderful orchestrator.
And this was the scene I realized that there is only one woman in this entire movie.
And when you saw that, you would.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably from what we were saying during the movie. We were like, oh, look at that. Oh.
Yes. Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband very much enjoyed this scene. But Timmy's...
Well, we weren't like cartoon wolves going, Urga, Urga.
No. You know? No, it was in the air. The flop sweats were in the air. The mother character is the only woman in the entire movie. Yeah,
Heloise is her name. That's not her real name, but that's a character.
Even when the screen is covered in dancers, it's an all.
Now,
yeah, we don't even see the.
In fairness,
we don't see the mothers drop off the boys at the school. They come in a bus.
They come in buses. Yeah.
We don't know the sex of the dog. The dog might have been female.
We'll have to dive into that. We'll put it, yes. So this is wonderful, and I thought it was the culmination. I'm like, this is the movie's high point. It is not.
No.
There are two more high points, even past this. This isn't even the final dungeon scene.
No.
Because they wandered into this dungeon of their own free will. While they were exploring the set, I believe that's what I remember, exploring the castle.
The castle, right?
Whatever.
Looking for a way out, right?
Right, but they do get caught by Dr. T before they can stop his plans, and they are cast to the dungeon, and they have to get in an elevator.
Yes.
And the elevator operator sings a song as if he was a department store elevator operator from the 40s.
Yeah.
The elevator song.
First floor dungeon. Assorted simple tortures. Molten lead, chopping blocks, and hot boiling oil. Second floor. Jewelry department. Leg chains, ankle chains, neck chains, wrist chains, thumb screws and nooses of the very finest rope.
Now, that, this would have given me a nightmare as a child, because the dungeon, or the elevator operator, is wearing a kind of a black helmet, that only his eyes are visible, mm-hmm. So it looks like the helmet is his head. Like, what's the character on Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids?
Oh, not Rerun.
Mushmouth?
Mushmouth, yeah.
Full face ski mask?
Oh, that's really weird, yeah.
Hey, but Fat Albert. Right, and the coloring of the elevator operator. He's the only black man in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised to see him. I don't know that he actually sung.
I was just looking that up and I can't find that either, although that actor did appear in a Broadway show. So
I'm showing that it was Alan Arick.
Yes.
And not much about him. So we'll have to look more into that. But what a wonderful piece. And I'm like, that might be a little bit in my range. I might be able to actually sing that.
Yeah.
So yeah, wonderful. So our heroes are led to the dungeon and locked up. They still have to figure out a way to stop Dr. T before he culminates his plan to rule the world. No. What's his plan?
To kidnap 500 boys
and make them play
his grand piano concerto that he's written.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a Seussian dream.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Husband, let me ask you, if you are on the eve of your plan, your dastardly plot culminating, what would you do right before you stroll out on stage?
Dress.
You would get dressed.
I would get dressed, yes.
Do it wonderfully. And this, I think, is the top that this movie has to offer, is that the scene is dressing song Doomy-Doo-Duds.
And dress me, dress me, dress me in my finest array. 'Cause just in case you haven't heard, today's Domino Day. Dress me in my silver garters, dress me in my diamond studs. 'Cause I'm going domi-doing in my Domino Duds. I want my undulating undies with the marabou frills. I want my beautiful bolero with the porcupine quills. I want my purple nylon girdle with the orange blossom buds. 'Cause I'm going domi-doing in my domi-do duds. Come on and dress me, dress me, dress me in my peek-a-boo blouse. With the lovely interlining made of Chesapeake mouse. I want my polka dotted dicky with the crinoline fringe. Or I'm going domi-doing on a domi-do binge. I want my lavender spats, and in addition to them, I want my honey-colored gusset with the herringbone hem. I want my softest little jacket made of watermelon suede, and my long persimmon placket with the platinum braid. I want my leg of mutton sleeves, and in addition to those, I want my cutie chamois booties with the leopard skin bows. I want my pink brocaded bodice with the fluffy fuzzy ruffs, and my gorgeous bright blue bloomers with the monkey feather cuffs. I want my organdy snood, and in addition to that, I want my chiffon Mother Hubbard lined with Hudson Bay rat. Dress me up from top to bottom, dress me up from tip to toe, dress me up in silk and spinach, for today is Domi-Do, Domi-Do Day, Domi-Do Day. So come and dress me in the blossoms of a million pink trees. Come on! Dress me up in liverwurst and camembert cheese. Come on and dress me up in pretzels. Dress me up in bock beer suds.
'Cause I'm going domi-doing in this domi-do duds.
This is a compliment to both the composer and the lyricist, and that those lyrics could be in a Dr. Seuss book and you could read them without music, and it would be just as delightful
as
listening to Hans Conried sing it.
Well said.
A couple lyrics pop out, like when he mentions with his monkey feather cuffs.
Yes.
What did he just say?
Chesapeake mouse was it, and he talked about a Hudson Bay rat.
Right. What a wonderful piece. And what's going on? what is going on screen while we're listening to this?
He's being dressed by an ensemble of attendants.
It's just a magic bit of choreography, and he's singing while he's doing it.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
I do believe I don't know if you were still here for the special features on the DVD, but he couldn't record that all at once because it's so wordy. And you can hear on the soundtrack when it cuts in with, they've just, you know, put in one little snippet so that he could take a breath.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly, truly a great scene. Mm-hmm. And, a favorite of this movie. Afterwards, there's just a lot of action and
gross.
Yeah. And, the kid is, he prevails, and the adult sort of helps, but it's mostly the kids' show. We get a scene of the 500 boys going crazy, and I'm like, that's just a normal day.
Oh, you hadn't mentioned one of my favorite parts was when they bring the boys up in the buses, and they make them go through lines, and they give them numbers, but they have them empty their pockets. Do you remember that?
Oh. And their suitcases.
And their suitcases, and there's like frogs, and catcher's mitts, and...
yo-yos.
And what are those?
Slingshots.
Slingshots. All these fantastic kid boys' toys, you know, being piled in mountains on the table.
We should have been looking for comic books.
Yeah. I'm sure there were comic books in there, but...
We'll have to watch it again, I guess.
Yeah. I just thought, okay, because they were told they couldn't bring them. They were forbidden, but they brought them anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And Dr. T knew. He knew they would.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Dr. T, we should mention, when he does get dressed, it's the wardrobe of Endora from Bewitched.
All right. Wonderful movie. What else do we have to say about this movie, this soundtrack, this composer, this lyricist?
Lyricist, of course, wonderful. And I think it's not easy to write. I mean, Dr. Seuss was just writing a children's book, right? But it's not easy to write that can be then set to music and work equally as well as it does in spoken word form.
Though he does it in this 13 years later in the Grinch animated special, right?
True.
So, and I remember there are other songs in his animated movies. So he certainly isn't going into unfamiliar territory.
Right.
Right. I mean, he certainly has a skill for lyricism.
What about the set designer and the, what do you call them, the people that clothe you?
Oh, the costumers.
The costumers. And
the costume designers, yeah.
So he is making up words for this Get Dressed, Do Me Do Duds song. And they have to go and figure out what he means by monkey feather cuffs.
Right, and if you were to watch it, you had a printout of the song in front of you, the lyrics, and you were to watch it, you'd realize that they're not actually realizing every single thing he's talking about on that. Right. But they sure do a lot of it. I mean, that costume, he does put on golden garters. That, and he puts on layers and layers and layers of clothing.
That is 2 minutes and 41 seconds of him getting dressed.
And I do think that if I remember correctly, there are things that they put on him and then take off and put on something else. I don't think they just like layer 20 things on his body.
Right.
But it's enjoyable, it's funny, and the final costume that he wears is like bizarre, right? Wasn't there like a big shape across it, you know?
It's wonderful. But when he is stripped down to the bare essentials, he's wearing a purple t-shirt and green shorts. And as we know from our comic book reading, that means evil.
Yes.
Or he's a Hulk.
Yeah, he could be a Hulk.
I saw something the other day, and we were watching some sort of preview or whatever, and I said to Bob, is there a Red Hulk?
Oh, my sweet summer child.
All right. Any last words before I give you your quiz?
I just want to thank you for forcing us to watch this, and I'm sorry I fell asleep the first time that we watched it, and I will definitely enjoy watching this again in the future.
Okay.
Nice.
As I said, there's plenty of clips. I think even that dressing song is on YouTube. Yes, I just did confirm.
So maybe you should trust Dr. Bob.
No. That's not how the magic works. We're coming up on 33 years. This is just how it's supposed to work.
All right. Are you ready for your pop quiz?
Quiz time. Quiz time. Quiz time. Quiz time. Quiz time.
And you know the rules?
No.
It's a composer that we have already looked at, but a movie that we have not. We have to guess the decade and the composer, and if possible, the movie.
Yep. This is kind of a softball.
Oh.
Ready?
Cheat. What? Do you put music detection on? Let me go first, because I know exactly what this is. This is Ian Fleming's film from 1967, Miss Shrewsbury the Spy, and the composer is Jonathan Markhamson.
And you saw that when you were a little boy in the theater and it stuck with you.
I wasn't born yet.
No, he said softball, so I'm going to say A League of Their Own.
Oh, no. Was that a sports joke?
Yes.
I'm leaving.
I want to say Jerry Goldsmith.
No.
And I also wanted to say Star Trek.
Close. There's a reason you want to say Star Trek.
Because of the
This is perhaps James Horner's most famous piece.
James Horner.
You know what it's from?
Let me say that what I thought it was from. I always thought it was like The Flash, but no good movie of The Flash has ever been made. So, it's not a space movie, is it?
It is.
Oh. Well, I'm batting zero. Go ahead.
This piece has been used over and over and over again outside of the original movie. It's been used in movie trailers, and it was even used in the last scene in Die Hard, even though it's not the same composer.
It's not from Alien, is it?
It's Aliens.
Oh, my God.
This is Bishop's Countdown. Where Ripley runs out to the platform and Bishop is no longer there, but the Queen is right behind her.
Oh.
And then Bishop shows up out of nowhere and saves her.
Wow, I can see that now.
You know, I saw Aliens years before I ever saw Alien.
Both are excellent.
Yes. I don't remember the first time I saw Alien, probably on a VHS tape. It scared the shit out of me.
Let's watch it tonight.
I would love it.
Would you?
Oh, I would love to see it.
So, Aliens was the first R-rated movie I saw. I snuck out because I was driving then, told my mom I was going to go see something, and went and saw Aliens instead. And I was scared. I was worried about what it would do to me. Like, am I going to be up all night or what have you? But no, I freaking loved it.
I can't remember. Are there boobs in that?
No, not really, no.
Okay.
Well, Sigourney Weaver didn't really...
No, not an actress of her caliber.
She's done a couple. A couple. And in the original Alien, there's a very close-up scene of her in her underwear and a small shirt.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, folks, that's all for today. If you've got thoughts you're burning to share with us, Dr. Bob will tell you where you can write your missives.
Instagram at @nerd_orchestra or everywhere else at GoGoCheckPod.
I highly recommend our sister podcast where Dr. Bob and Dr. Husband take an in-depth look at DC checkerboard-covered comics of the 1960s. Give it a listen and marvel how Dr. Husband turns into Mrs. Twitchy Curtains and derails the comic conversation with his wonderful squirrel chasing. Next time on an all-new Nerd Orchestra, are you one of those that believes that life here began out there, far across the universe? Possibly with tribes of human who may have been the forefathers of the Egyptians, or the Toltecs, or the Mayans. Or do you sometimes feel that you're just spinning endlessly through life while cheesy music plays over your sleeping body?
Yeah, that one.
Maybe you feel that you can be improved somehow, rebuilt. Faster, stronger, and better than you were before. If so, you're not going to want to miss this next episode of Nerd Orchestra in about 1 month from now. Please do the like and subscribe tango when you get a chance and are feeling charitable. And with that, we close things out by rolling the credits and acknowledging that we've come to
the end.